Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Less than 2 weeks ago, you remembered that we lost a beloved foreign correspondent who'd brought us news from that part of the world for years and years. New York Times correspondent Anthony Shadid died from an acute asthma attack while trying to leave Syria. And over the course of his very long and very illustrious career, he covered almost two decades of Middle East conflict in a way that nobody else could. He won the Pulitzer Prize twice. He authored three books, the third of which is now published posthumously today. And we're joined by Thanasi Kambanis, a columnist of the Boston Globe, correspondent for The Atlantic, one of Shadid's closest friends and colleagues. Thanasi wrote an essay called The Things That Anthony Shadid Taught Me, which is a remembrance of his friend. And he joins us to talk about Anthony Shadid, his work, and his final book called House of Stone, a memoir of home, family, and a lost Middle East. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning.
You know, I wonder if you've gone back and read pieces of this book now. This is a book that he wrote after he was freed. He was captured in Libya, and he went home after that, and part of these books come from his thoughts about that experience.
Well, he actually wrote this. He wrote this book, conceived this book beginning in 2006, and he had more or less finished the bulk of it by the time he was captured in Libya. At that point, he was revising it, and this was a sort of obsessive labor of love. I mean,
remodeling this house.
Yes, so at a time that he was really immersed in war in his own country of origin in Lebanon in 2006, he had this vision in the middle of the conflict that he would take this almost pile of rocks, not quite a pile of rocks, but this decrepit house that he owned a share of, and that he would essentially turn it back into its Ottoman splendor and replant its garden, and he hoped recapture his relationship with his daughter and find himself again. And over the course of the 5 years that followed, he was almost as obsessed with that house as he was with the stories that he wrote and that we all shared with him. And he also always went back to this village called Marjayoun after each sort of disruptive or intense or difficult chapter in his life.
That was his place to refresh himself and sort of escape from the very violent, troubled world that he was so good at reporting on. And what made him so good at that particular kind of reporting?
Well, Anthony was an incredibly it's hard to talk about him in the past tense. He was an incredibly empathic and intuitive person, and he really, he loved everything about the Arab world, and he loved everything about the subjects he was writing about, and that lent an incredible vitality and humanity to all his stories. The other thing, of course, was that he was obsessed with what it all meant. So he had read all the history, he had read all the religious texts, he read the poetry, he listened to the songs, he watched the movies. If he was interviewing someone, he would ask to ride along with them wherever they were going. He would listen to the song playing on the car radio. He would remember those lyrics, and then he would maybe go back later, find the original recording and play that over and over.
Taught himself Arabic, right?
Yeah, because of his name, people assume he grew up speaking Arabic. He didn't know a word of Arabic as a kid in Oklahoma. He went to Cairo as a teenager and started studying Arabic from scratch, and he became, in a way that comes very clear in this memoir, almost a linguist, really studying the layers and the poetry of the language and the dialects.
The way that you describe him in your essay is as a mentor as well. I mean, what you describe is someone who was extremely generous with his contacts, with his stories, with his knowledge, with his research, as somebody who, although he got what in the business he calls a scoop all the time, didn't seem to be competitive.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost as if he was so much better than everybody else, he didn't mind giving away everything he had.
Worried.
Because, yeah, there was always going to be more left.
What did Bill Keller say about him? Nicest guy in the world. I mean, nicest person he'd ever met.
After his death, talking to other people, we find more and more almost secret acts of help and love that he gave other colleagues. So you find out he was reading your book manuscript too, and he was on the phone with you for an hour as you were getting ready to deploy for an assignment while he was in the middle of everything else.
Fantastic.
And it's sort of endless.
So let's talk about what brought him back over and over. You describe the way that he felt that he was the only person that could tell these stories, and that kept drawing him not only to the Middle East, but to especially troubled places. I remember after his passing, watching a news report, and they said, you know, this is a guy who nearly lost his life in Libya. He's been in danger a number of times. You know, to a certain extent, he must have been drawn to the thrill of it, to the danger must have of attracted him. Do you think that's true?
Well, I mean, nobody covers war repeatedly without having some affinity for the particular intensity and fear and overcoming that fear that entails covering a war. But for Anthony, that certainly wasn't the focus of it. I mean, that was one part of it, and that's one thing he was good at. But the thing he was incomparable at was sort of at capturing a narrative and a human essence, and then connecting it to some bigger thing that we would care about. He had this incredible gift for storytelling and for imagining the worlds of others. And I think especially in wars, he found that challenge unbelievably appealing to take from the kind of narrative that everyone else simplified into killing, conflict, the torture, you know, the things that, say, the typical story you would read from Libya last year or from Iraq over the years, to go into that kind of morass and say, even from there, where there's an easy, obvious narrative that's the wrong narrative, I'm going to extract a better, truer, more enduring narrative and somehow over the din of conflict get people's attention. And he always, he relished the sort of the marketplace of information. So he didn't want to, he was offered magazine jobs. He could have left newspapers years ago. He wanted to be in the daily conversation of a daily newspaper where policymakers read it, normal people read it, where, you know, the thing that shapes
where
our
they could
general.
Carry it with him to coffee.
And to fight for attention in that arena and win is a real testament to his storytelling power.
Wow.
We're speaking with Thanasi Kambanis, a columnist at the Boston Globe, close friend and colleague of the late Anthony Shadid. Let's go back to his book. This is the book that's just published today posthumously from Anthony Shadid called House of Stone, a memoir of home, family, and a lost Middle East. And he draws parallels between his Lebanon and his family's homeland and his obsession with this house, almost as though his reporting, his obsession with capturing the stories and the history of the Middle East is tied up with his obsession with his own family's history, got somehow tied up with this house of stone. How do those all connect for him?
Well, he created a living metaphor, a tangible metaphor of his own conflict between wanting to be rooted and his sort of inescapable compulsion to wander and to find and tell other people's stories. In this house, I mean, he did the same thing that he did with his writing. He imagined a world and sort of by force of will brought it into being, and it was beautiful. I mean, these stone arches, these tiled floors that he was so, you know, that he would talk about endlessly. It was amazing. I mean, I saw it when it was a wreck, and I saw it when it was finished. And it was like an Ottoman palace in miniature. At the same time, for him, it was the place he had to go back to, but it was also the place he had to leave. And he couldn't stay, and that was his nature. He had to go. He had to go out especially when the Arab Spring began, he had to tell that story, and it tortured him. But at the same time, he loved it. He loved the staying. He loved the going.
And now that he's gone, those stories won't be told by anyone else.
They won't be.
Thanasi Kambanis, a columnist at the Boston Globe, correspondent for The Atlantic, close friend and colleague of the late Anthony Shadid. Anthony Shadid's book, published today, in House of Stone, a memoir of home, family, and a lost Middle East. You can read an excerpt from it at our website. Go to thetakeaway.org. Thanasi, thank you so much.
Glad to be with you.
An extraordinary homecoming in that book and in the story of Anthony Shadid. We'd love to hear your response to that conversation or anything else on the program. You can call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. We've been talking about the destruction of Qurans at the Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan. A listener named Miguel posted this. The president was right to apologize. It was an accident. Maybe the unit commander should as well, but don't grovel. Nobody should grovel for an honest mistake. You know how to reach us. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.